Okay, we're going to start here on the bottom of Chav Dalet Amud Bet. Here the Gemara is going to continue with stories about Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. We had the original story about Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa that when he was traveling, he used to be able to stop the rain while he was traveling, and when he got home, he's able to restart the rain. And here at the bottom of Amud Bet, it says, Amri Yehuda Merav, B'chol yom v'yom, bat kol yotzeit v'omeret, hol ha'olam kulo nizon b'shvil Chanina b'ni. Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, his righteousness supports the entire world. It gives mizanot to the entire world. V'Chanina b'ni dayo b'kav charuvim erev Shabbat erev Shabbat. And he basically had nothing and needed nothing. And he survived on carob from erev Shabbat to erev Shabbat because he didn't have any lechem. He had no bread, meaning that he had almost nothing, yet he was providing the parnoso for the entire world. So now, hava regila debetu, the Mechama Tanura called Mali de Shabto. Every Erev Shabbat, his wife used to fire up the oven, Vishadja Akatarto. And into the oven, she used to throw something that made a lot of smoke, Mishum Kisufa, because she was so embarrassed by her from her neighbors that she had nothing to cook, nothing to bake. So she used to fire up the oven and just put something that smokes in it to make it as if they had some food. Havli Hach Shivata Bishata. She had this terrible neighbor, Amra Michte. Yadana, the late Lehu Velomide. I know they are penniless. They don't have a thing. So why is the oven on? Michael Lehi, what's all this commotion? What's all this smoke that's coming out of her oven? Azla, Vitarfa Babel. She went over there and knocked on the door. Ichsifa, Va'ayla Lindarona. The wife of Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa was embarrassed and she didn't know what to do because this woman's knocking on the door looking for her. So she went into the inner chamber to hide. It avidla nisa, miraculously it happened, the chazila tanura, mala lachma, so an oven full of bread, v'agna mala lisha, and a trough full of dough. Amrala, planita, planita, she goes, madam, madam, aiti maso, bring the scraper, the kacharich lachmech, because your bread is burning in the oven. Amrala, afana, the hachi ailu. That's what I was doing upstairs. I was going to find my scraper so that I could take the bread off the oven. Tana, avhi, lavi, merda nichnasa. She went to get her scraper. She actually went to get her scraper. Mipnei shemelumedet b'nisim. Because she knew that miracles happen all the time in her household. And she wasn't just saying that she went to get the scraper. She literally was going to get the scraper. So, amarle debitu aremit nizil v'nitzdar kulehai. His wife says to Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, how much longer can we go like this? It's just, we're penniless. We have nothing. It's impossible for us to continue living like this. So, Amar La, my Navid. So he says to her, what should I do? Say, Bai Rachme, Dinit Vulachmide. She says, Daven to Hashem, that they should give you at least something. Bai Rachme, so he Daven, Yatztakamin Pisat Yad, looked like a palm of a hand, Viavile Chad Kara de Petora de Dehavel, and handed him one golden leg of the table. So now here there's some controversy as to whether Chazai or Chazia, whether he or she saw in a dream. B'chalma atidei tzadikei da'achlei aptora da'havo. In the future, tzadikim would eat on a golden table. Didlei tlat kare, that has three legs to it. Va'at ochelot aptora da'trei kare. And, or Ihu, depending who had the dream here, was eating on a table that only had two legs. So Amar La or Amri Lei, Nechalach, the Mechal Achle, Kuliyama B'Torah, the Mishlam. Are you comfortable that everybody else up there will have a whole table? V'anan, Abtorah, the Michsa. And we're going to end up eating on a table that's missing a leg. So, Amrele, Umay Navid. So, she says, what are we going to do? So, Bayrachme, Delishkalinu Minach. She says, go daven, that they take it back for you. Bayrachme, Rabchinir Mendoza Davins, Shakluum. And they took the leg back. Tana. The latter miracle was greater than the first miracle. Digmire, we have a misora. Dimiyav yave, that from mina shemaim they give. Mishka lo shakla, they don't take anything back. So here the fact that they took it back was more miraculous than the fact that they actually granted it to them in the first place. So here, he wanted to have some, his wife said, I want some relief in this world. But what ended up happening is if they took relief in this world, it came at the expense of olam haba. And that's what we always talked about. We talked about earlier in the Masechta, this idea that there is a trade-off, that Hashem makes it for the reward for the tzaddikim l'olam haba, But sometimes they have to get less bi'olam hazeh. And over here, to change that status quo would mean detracting somehow from olam haba. In the end, she realized that, and she understood what had happened, and she said, give it back. Because she was able to understand that it meant more to keep it in olam haba than it meant to have it right now. And I guess that helped her to overcome the difficulty that they were facing. Now, the next story is one of my favorite stories in Shas, which is Chad Beis Shimshei, one Erev Shabbat. And Rashi over here says Beis Shimshei is always in Shas, refers to Erev Shabbat. Chazya lebrate davat tziva. He saw that his daughter was upset. She was despondent. Amar la biti, amaya tzivat. Why are you so upset? Amar le, kli shel chometz nitchalef li b'kli shel shemen. The jug of vinegar got mixed up with the jug of oil. Vidlakti mimenu or the Shabbat. And instead of putting oil in the candle for Shabbat, I put in vinegar instead. Amar la biti, mayi patlach. Why does it matter? Mi shamar le shemen vidlok. Who? Yomar le chometz vidlok. The one who tells shemen to light, he will tell the vinegar to light. Tana. So then they lit it. It lit all through Shabbat. It stayed alight until they used it for Havdalah. Now Rashi over here makes an interesting comment. He says that they actually did not use it for their light for Havdalah, but they lit another candle from it in order to use for Havdalah because they didn't want to get any benefit from a miracle. So Rashi mentioned this before, that from Masi Nisim, they didn't want to benefit. And we saw that in the Gemara as well in yesterday's daf, that people didn't want to benefit from Masi Nisim. So over here, they didn't want to have benefit from the Masi Nisim, therefore they lit another candle in order to utilize it for Ner Havdalah. Although obviously they had to get some benefit from it because it was a lit for the entire Shabbat. That means on Friday night they were getting benefit from the candle. That's why they lit the candle, so they would have light in their house. So there are those that want to argue that there is a difference in the type of miracles that take place. If a miracle is a yesh me'ayin type of miracle, or a miracle is done for the personal benefit of an individual, over there we say that we don't want to benefit from Masa Nisim. But a miracle that is yesh me'yesh, which means that it takes something that looks natural and maintains it. For instance, like by Chanukah, where they lit the menorah and the oil just didn't burn down. So that's a miracle, but it's not a yesh me'ayin, that's like a yesh me'yesh, and it's just that the oil continued to last and was not consumed by the fire. So that type of miracle is permitted, or if they do a miracle for someone else, in that case they're not getting personal benefit, then they're okay with it. So that's one way to deal with it. The statement here of Rav Chanina ben Dosa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the one who says that oil should light, will also say that the vinegar should light, is very akin to what the Ramban says at the end of Parshat Bo. There's a fundamental Ramban of the Torah at the end of Parshat Bo, where he describes that the purpose of why we have so many mitzvot that are zecher l'tziat Mitzrayim is because Yitziat Mitzrayim was a nes nigleh. It was an open, clear miracle, Hashem's intervention in the world. But Hashem doesn't always do those miracles that intervene in the world. But many times he acts with the world, what we call a nes nistar, with hidden miracles. And so Mitzrayim is a way for us to remember and to know that just like Hashem interacts with the world through a nes niglet points in time, he also interacts with a nes nistar. And the zecher l'tziat Mitzrayim is always to remind us of that fact. But the Ramban goes on to say even more than that, and he says that the world's existence is a nes nistar. What's the difference between a nes niglet and a nes nistar? Ramban says a nes nigleh is something where it changes the course of nature. It's something that's obvious that is different than what has happened before. When the sun stands still in the sky, that's a nes nigleh, because that's something that changes the course of nature. But if something is within the natural order, then it's called a nes nistar. And what the Ramban says over there is that the entire existence, the entire creation is a nes nistar. And why is it that, for instance, in our case here, that oil burns? Well, oil burns because the chemical properties of oil are such and such, and therefore it burns because of those chemical properties and the exposure to oxygen with a flame, and that's why the shemen burns. But the fact that shemen burns, and that's the natural order, we call it nature because it's something that occurs over and over again, or it's a law of chemistry, a law of physics. Those types of things we call nature. But the truth is that Hashem is mechadesh b'tuvo b'choyom tamid masiv reshit. Hashem recreates the world every day. And the fact that Hashem sustains the natural order or nature is just as much a miracle as when Hashem changes nature. It's just that in a sense we're nearer to that because we see it every day and we call it nature. But when something's out of the ordinary, then we say all of a sudden it's a nes. So Ramban makes the point there that the nes nigleh, those open miracles, should remind us or make it clear to us that the miracles that we see are miracles to tell us that every day, the everyday nature of the world is a miracle. And we do Zecher Letziat Mitzrayim, it should awaken with us that understanding that our existence and everything in nature is a miracle. And Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa basically expresses that over here and says, why does it make a difference that it's oil or it's chometz? Oil burns because God said that oil should burn. That's a nes nistar. Chometz burns because God will say that the chometz will burn. There should be no difference between oil burning and vinegar burning. They're both the same miracle because Hashem has to command them to happen. One of them is part of the natural order or nature, and therefore it's not called a miracle, it's called nature. But the other one, it's just as equal or just as miraculous that the oil burns, that the vinegar burns. And because Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa had that understanding or that depth of understanding, therefore, it did stay a lit. It would stay the light because he understood that fundamental concept that everything is a miracle. And therefore, the Shemen and the Chometz were indifferent between them because it's the same miracle that Hashem performs. Especially for someone like Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, who we know from the stories about him was Mulumad v'nisim, like it says about his wife, that she knew that there were plenty of miracles. Because for him, there was no difference between nature and miracles because everything was a miracle. And because he had that hashkafa and that understanding, he was able to see that the chometz, that the vinegar would stay alight, just like the shemen. Anyway, it's a beautiful concept that the Ramban mentions in the end of Parshat Bo, but also I think very much highlighted by what Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa says over here. So now we have more stories about Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, havelu hanach ize. He had these goats. Amrulei kamafsedon. The neighbors were saying that they were eating from their fields or they were doing damage to their fields. So he says, Amar, Ika Mafsadan, if they are causing damage, Nichlino Dube, then the bear should eat them up. Vilo, if that's not the case, Kochad Vachad Tete Lurta Duba Vikarnayu. Then the next day, each one of them is going to show up with a bear on its horns. Lurta, sure enough. Aite Kochad Vachad Duba Vikarnayu. Sure enough, that next day, they both show up with bears on their horns. Havo le haushivita, the kabanya beito, he had a neighbor who was building a house, v'lo mato kishuret, and the boards, the floorboards or the ceiling boards, didn't reach from side to side. Atya kame, she came to visit Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, amrale, baniti beiti, v'lo kamato kishurai. She says, I built the house, but the frame of the house is too far apart that the boards don't reach from side to side. Amalei Mashmech, what's your name? Amalei Aiku. So Amalei Aiku Nimtu Kishorech. It says, Aiku, your board should expand. So Tana, Higiu Achiyatsu Amalekan V'Amalekan. They expanded to the point, but actually protruded an Ama on each side. Vishomim Snipim Asaum. That they had appendages that were added on the ends that made them long enough to reach across. Tanya Palimo Omer, Ani Ra'iti Oto Abayit, I saw that house, Vayu Korotav Yotziot Amalekan V'Amalekan, and the boards were extended out on Amma on each end, V'Amru Lei, Bayit Zeh Shikira Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa B'Tfilato. When we went by, you know, when they were taking the tour of the neighborhood, there was a little plaque there that said this was the house that Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa caused to be roofed by the expansion of the boards through his davening to Hashem. Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa, Mehechen hayu le izim. The Gemara then goes back to the story about the izim, the goats, before and says, wait a minute. How did Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa have goats? Va'ani ava. Wasn't he poor, penniless? We just told the stories before. What's he doing with two goats? Vod, amru chachamim emegadim be'im adaka be'eretz Yisrael. On top of that, there's a restriction against raising be'im adakot, light animals, grazing animals in Eretz Yisrael. So Amar Rabbi Pinchas, Maseh, Ve'avar Adam Echad al Petach Beito. Someone was passing by his house, V'yineach Shem Tarnagolim, and they left some chickens there. U'mitza'atan Ishto, Sh'Rabbi Hanina ben Dosa. Hanina ben Dosa's wife saw them, and picked them up. V'amalah, al tochli mi beitzehim. Don't eat from their eggs. Keep them around. V'arbu beitzim v'tarnagolim. Over time, they kept laying eggs. The eggs were hatching into chicks, and they were just getting to be too many chickens around. V'yu mitzarim otam. And they were squeezing them out of their little space there. So umachran, so they went ahead and sold them, v'kanabit mehem izim. And they used the proceeds to buy goats with them. So pamachat avar oto adam, shavdu mimenu atarnagolim. So that guy who had left or lost his chickens was passing by. V'amar lechavero, b'kana nachti atarnagolim sheli. Here's the place where I left my chickens. Shama Rabbi Chanina, amar lo, yesh lecha behen siman. Do you have a siman to identify them? Amar lo hein, said yes, not only siman, he gave him the siman, v'natal et ha'izim. And he took the goats that Rabbi Chanina Mendoza, he was a shomer avidah, that's why he had these goats, they weren't his goats. V'hein hein, ize de aitu du beber kanayu. And these are the same goats that the ones that brought the bears back on their horns. Meaning that the miraculous goats were actually not Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa's goats. They were goats that belonged to this other individual, but he was just taken care of because he had to transfer the money from all these chickens onto something else. So he bought goats in order to preserve the Avedah or to take care of this individual's Avedah until he returned. Right, so the way the Gemara is structured now, it only answers the question about if he was poor, how did he have the goats, does not address the issue of raising the goats in Eretz Yisrael. If you look in the Girsat Agra, the Agra eliminates that question of Ein Megadlin Behema Daka Eretz Yisrael. He eliminates it from the story altogether and takes that question out of the Gemara. Well, just because he takes the question out of the Gemara doesn't mean it's not a question. But my assumption is that Ein Megadlin Behema Daka Eretz Yisrael is to bring up flocks of these animals. We have to have tremendous grazing. To have one or two of these animals is not a problem. It's a question when you are breeding or bringing up tremendous flocks of them, that's where the issue is, because then they're going to eat these types of behemot dakot. They eat up everything in sight, and they ruin basically the land, and they ruin the production of the land. So they are destroyers, in a sense, of the land because of their grazing. So you have one or two in your backyard, I don't think that's subject to the restriction of Megadlin behemot dakot Beretz Yisrael. If you have flocks of them, then it's a problem. So I'm assuming that's why either the Gra thinks that it's not a question here, or the Gemara doesn't address that because he really wasn't raising goats. He wasn't bringing up tremendous numbers of goats. He just used it as a way to preserve the value of the Avedah that this individual had left there before. Yeah, so that's what I mentioned before, that the commentaries here discuss why in certain cases they benefited from Ma'aseh Nisim, in other cases they did not benefit from Ma'aseh Nisim. They claim that in that case it was to prevent the embarrassment of his wife by the daughter. It was to prevent her from being despondent. And so some of them argue that it's just protecting someone's emotions or feelings. So that's why they were okay. Others, as I discussed before, say that Ma'aseh Nisim, or the benefit of Ma'aseh Nisim, is only problematic if it's a Yesh Miayin, not if it's a Yesh Miyesh. And still others say it depends who the individual is. Someone like Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa, who is Mulumad ben Nisim, somebody who sees everything as being miraculous for them, there's no difference or differentiation between miracle and nature, and therefore to be benefiting from Ma'aseh Nisim is not as problematic. The only one who seems to disagree with that is Rashi. Rashi says that they lit the Havdalah candle from that candle and then used it, but that's not the Pashtut Gemara necessarily. It could be that they used that for the Havdalah candle, and the reason they didn't worry about it is because for them, the Nisim and Teva were not distinct or differentiated. So that's the stories about Rabbi Chanina ben Dosa. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat is a Talmid Muvhak of Rabbi Yochanan. He is a Talmid and then later a Talmid Chaver with Rabbi Yochanan. And because after Reish Lakish passes away, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat becomes the main Chavruta for Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, Dechikalei Milta Tuva. He was in poverty stricken. He had nothing. Avad Milta, Vola Havilei Midei Lemitam. He went ahead and had his blood let. And he didn't have any money to eat anything. Because we said before that when once they had bloodletting, you were supposed to eat certain things and drink certain things afterwards in order to preserve their bodies or preserve their health. But he didn't have enough money to pay for that. And we saw that was the story with Abba Umana, that he used to take care of the Chachamim who came to get their bloodlet, that he would pay for the food for them. So Shaka Bara de Tuma, all that he had was a little skin of a garlic. Bishadi Bapume, stuck in his mouth. Chalesh libe, he felt faint, v'nim, and whether he passed out or he fell asleep. Azar Rabbanan lish'ule be, the Rabbanan came to visit him to speak to him in Torah. Chazua, de kabochi v'chayich, they saw in this sleep or stupor. He was crying. He was smiling. V'nafek tzutzita denura me'apote. And there was a ray of light or sparks or sparkling fire that was coming out of his forehead. Kitar, when he awoke, Amrulei, my time a kabachit v'chayachit. Why were you crying and smiling or laughing? Amrulei, tamayoti v'imi HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I was sitting with God. Amrulei, ad matai it's there b'hayalma. How long do I have to go on with this type of pain, this type of difficulty of living in this world? Amrulei, Elazar b'ni, nechal cha d'apche le'alma m'resha. He says, no problem. God says to me, if you want, I'll restart the world from the beginning. Efshar demialdat bishata demizone. And there might be a chance that you are born in a time when there's more panasa in the world. So first of all, he says to Amrei Kamei, kuli hai v'efshar? All that, you're going to redo the whole world and it's only possible? You're not certain that I'm going to be born in a time where I'll have better panasa? So that was the way that HaKadosh Baruch Hu presented to him, which is important. We mentioned this earlier in the Masechta, that within the context of the world, an individual can only get as great as the available parnosa in the world at that time. Hashem is willing to do benefits or miracles for individuals to bring them up to the level of the parnosa in the world at that point in time. But he can't change the nature of the individual vis-a-vis the totality of the world. So if it's a time of difficulty within the world, then Hashem's not going to make it that the individual has exceptional success within that difficulty of the world. So again, he's saying when you're going to be born, you're going to come in another time, doesn't mean that you're going to be born into a time where there's going to be plentiful parnosa. So there's no guarantee that things will be better for you the next time around. So then he says, okay, I have another question. Amalei, d'chayitve o d'chayano? Says, do I have more to live or have I lived more? Which one? Have I lived the majority of my life already or is the majority of my life ahead of me? Amalei, d'chayat. You've lived the majority of your life already. So he says, if that's the case, then I don't need it. So I don't need you to restart the world just to get me to a place of mizonot. So it seems to be that he believed that whatever difficulty he was facing now, he wasn't sure that he could keep going or if he could hold up. Once God told him that he was already through the majority of his life, he knew that whatever he had left for him was going to be less than whatever he had experienced until now. So he says, all right, if that's it, I can hold out. And then once he did that, he said to Hashem, look, I'm taking too big a risk to have you restart the world, so I'm going to hold out for the other half. So then, Amar Li, Hashem says back to me, B'hai Agra, for the reward, Amart Lo Be'ina, that you didn't want me to restart the world, Ya'avinan Lecha, La'amud Ate, in the Atid Lavo, I'm going to give you, T'leisar Naharvata D'mishcha Afar Simon, I'm going to give you 13 rivers of balsam oil, Dachyan, that either are Tahorim or that they are clear, Kiprat V'diglat, like the Euphrates and the Tigris, the Ma'agant Behu, that you will enjoy. So Amri the Kamei, Hai Vitulo, says, that's it? That's all I'm going to get? So Amri, Ulechavreich Mayahivna. Hashem says back to him, well, then what am I going to give to your friends? Amri, Ana Migavra Delele Bina? Here, I mean, Elazar ben Pedad says back to Hashem, am I asking from someone who has limited supplies? Why does it matter what anybody else is getting? I mean that you have endless supplies, you can do whatever you please. So why does it matter what everybody else is getting? So, Machyan Baskutla Aputai. So then Hashem struck him with one of his fingers on his forehead. That's what produced the ray of light or the sparks that came out of his head. Vamali Elazar Bri Gire Bechagiri. My arrows are at you, my arrows at you. Rashi reads this as a positive statement that Hashem, out of affection towards Rabbi Elazar Pedat, hit him on the forehead with his finger, and that's what generated the sparks or the light that came out. You obviously could read it in the negative form, which is that Elazar ben Pedat was pushing too hard, and Hashem was pushing back on him. Because that could be, you could read that easily into the Gemara as well. Although, generally, the Gemara here seems to have a more positive side to it with regards to Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, and I think that's why Rashi read it in a more positive manner. Rabbi Chama bar Chanina gazar tanita. He put in place a tanit for Geshem, v'lo ata mitra, and it didn't rain. Amrulei, v'ha Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi gazar tanita v'ata mitra. When Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi used to do this, he put in place a tanit, and then the rain came. Amrulei, ha'ana ha'bar Levi. That's me, and that's your Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is greater than me, so when he did it, it worked. But when I do it, it doesn't work as well. So Amrulei, So they said to him, listen, let's get our act together here. Let us get our whole tzibur, not just you, but the entire tzibur together. We'll be mekavein, and we'll try to, we call it, put their hearts in place, and then the rain will come. So ban rachme, they try again to daven, v'lo'ate mitra, and the rain doesn't come. So Amar Lahu, he says back to the community, Necha luchu shiavo matar b'shvilenu, do you guys want the rain to come because of us? Amar Lahu, hey, they said yes. Amar rakia, rakia, kasei panech. So it says to the skies, the heavens, cover yourself, cover yourself. Lo'echsei, they didn't cover themselves. When it says to cover themselves, it means with clouds. Clouds should come and cover it up, nor there should be rain. It didn't do that. Amar kama azin pnei rakia. How brazen is the rakia, the face of rakia, that it doesn't cover itself? Sure enough, ichsei va'ata mitra. And then the rain came. So finally he had to work in the negative form. He was trying to get the skies to cover their face, to be embarrassed the fact that they weren't providing for the tzibur. That didn't work. Didn't work until he basically pointed to the sky and says, you are so brazen that you're not willing to give in at all. And then all of a sudden it was embarrassed and it covered itself up and brought the rain. Levi gazar tanita v'lo atar mitra. Levi established a fast because there was no rain and the rain doesn't come. Amar lefanav, he says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribono shel olam, alita v'yashavta b'marom, you went and sat up in heaven, v'enatam rachim avanecha, and you're not being merciful on your children down below. Atar mitra, the rain came, v'itla, and he was injured or he became lame. So Amar Rabbi Elazar, Lo'olam ayatiyach adam dvarim klapei mala. Person shouldn't speak in the type of manner or the way that Levi spoke with free flowing type of words, making claims against the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shadam gadol ayatiyach dvarim klapei mala. Where Levi threw out these types of expressions with regards to Kadosh Baruch Hu v'itla, and he became lame. Umanu, who's this big guy? It's Levi. Where it says v'haga amalei. That's why Levi had a problem walking. That's why he was lame. V'ha Levi, we learned this in the Gemara in Sukkah with the Simchat Beit HaShoeva. V'ha Levi, ach v'kida kamei d'Rabbi v'idlo. Levi was performing before Rabbi a kida. A kida is basically a handstand on your thumbs or a push-up with only on your thumbs. And it was a difficult, dangerous move. And while he was doing it in front of Rabbi, he got injured. And v'idlo, and then he became lame. So Gemara says, ha v'ha garmile. They both caused the problem. So as Rashi explains over here, the problem was the chait. The chait was that he spoke inappropriately towards HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But when did HaKadosh Baruch Hu take out his wrath or punish him for the chait? When he put himself into a dangerous situation. So when he was doing the kiddah, which was a difficult move, something dangerous, then at that moment, Hashem took out the kapara for the chait at that moment, and he was itla. So he's itla from doing the kiddah. But why was he itla doing the kiddah? It's because of the chait that brought him that punishment while he was doing it. That's the way that Hashem does it. Hashem takes out retribution, the kapara for a chait, at a time when a person is already in danger in a difficult situation. That's what we say in Bamei Madlikim, with regards to the mitah of women, that women die in childbirth from these three items that they're not makpid on. So why is it, what does childbirth have to do with those three items? The answer is that childbirth is a very dangerous time. So these other avonot are brought to the forefront when a woman is in childbirth, and therefore that's what the Mishnah means, that because of those chataim, a woman dies during childbirth because that's the time when she's exposed, and those chataim are meaningful in the times when a person's in danger. Rabbi Chia bar Lulayni, Sheminu Hanach Anane deKamrin. He overheard these clouds saying, Netu v'netfei maya ba'amonu Moav. Let us go drop our water over Amonu Moav, which is in Transjordan. Amar lefanav, Ribono shel olam, Kishanata Torah la'amecha Yisrael, Chazarta kol umoto olam v'lo kiblua. When you ran to give the Torah to Bnei Yisrael, you offered it to the other nations, and they didn't accept it. And now you're having the clouds go drop the rain over there. Why don't you have them drop it over here? Shadu hacha. Let them drop it over here in Eretz Yisrael. So, shadua aduchtayu. And sure enough, that's what happens. They opened up their clouds, and they rained on Eretz Yisrael instead of crossing over Eretz Yisrael to dump it in Amon Moav. Dorish Rabbi Chia bar Lunai, my dechtiv, what is meant by the pasuk? Tzadik katamar yifrach, keres bavanon yisgeh. So why is the tzadik compared to a tamar and also compared to an eres? Im ne'amar tamar, if it just spoke about a palm tree, lama ne'amar erez. Vim ne'amar erez, if it's talking about a cedar, lama ne'amar tamar. Why does it mention the palm tree? So ila ne'amar tamar v'lo ne'amar erez, had it only mentioned the palm tree and not the cedar, hayit omer. Ma tamar ein gizo machlif. Just like the palm tree does not regenerate its trunk, it doesn't grow back again. Av tzadik chas v'shalom ein gizo machlif. So too, maybe the tzaddik's trunk or will not rejuvenate, it will not grow back. If for whatever reason it was cut off, or for whatever reason something goes wrong, that he won't be able to replenish it, to do tshuva, or to rectify it. L'kach ne'amar erez. So therefore it mentions a cedar, implying that the cedar is gizo machlif, that its trunk regrows or rejuvenates. Ilu ne'amar erez, had you spoken about the cedar, v'lo ne'amar tamar, and you hadn't mentioned the palm tree, hayit omer, ma erez ein osib peirot. Just like the cedar doesn't produce fruit, av tzadik chas v'shalom ein osib peirot. So the tzu, the tzadik, does not create schar, as Rashi calls it, latid davo, or peirot. He does not have offspring. He doesn't recreate himself through either his offspring or through his talmidim. Kach demer tamar. Therefore it says tamar, which has fruits. So demar erez. So now the Gemara goes back and says, wait, it says erez because erez gizo machlif, suggesting that the erez has a trunk that regrows. V'atanyo. Don't we have a braita? Halokea chilan mechaviro lakutz. Person purchases a tree from his friend to cut it down. Magbio minakarka tefach v'kotzeitz. He measures a tefach off the ground and then he cuts the tree. V'stana shikma. In a sycamore that is used for its boards. Shnei tefachim. You have to wait, come two tefachim off the ground and then cut it. V'tulat shikma. The first time you cut the sycamore, shlosha tefachim. You have to leave three tefachim. Bikanim u'gvanim, with reeds and vines. Minapakak ulamala. From the first knot off the ground and above, that's where you cut. Bidgahlim ube arazim, by palm trees and cedar trees, chofer lamato mashrish. The fish ain't gizo machlif. You can uproot it from the ground because once you cut it, it's not growing back again. So there's no purpose in cutting it. You may as well just take the whole thing out. So therefore, you see that a tamar and an erez are in the same category. That means that they do not grow back. So why are you telling me that there's a differentiation between a tamar and an erez, that the erez grows back and the tamar doesn't? They both don't grow back. Where it says, Hachamai Skinim is Sharmine Arazim. We're talking about the other cedars. Kidarabu Barhuna, Dama Rabu Barhuna, Asara Mine Arazim Haim. There are 10 different categories or subspecies of Arazim. Shinemar, Etain Bimidbar Erez Shitava Das. We saw this in Rosh Hashanah, we saw it in Sukkah as well, that they darshan the Pasuk. The Pasuk has 7 different species that are mentioned there, which all seem to be Etain Bimidbar Erez, colon, and these are all the Arazim that we're talking about. And Gemara there adds on an additional 3 items that aren't mentioned in the Pasuk that are all called Arazim. So there are 10 different species or subspecies of Erez, of cedars, and it could be referring to one of these other subspecies that do have Gizo Machlif versus what's brought in the Braita there where Gizo Eno Machlif, where its trunk does not grow back. Tan Rabbanan, Maseh B'Rabbi Eliezer, Shigazar Shloshesrei Taniyot Al Tzibur. He instituted the 13 fasts on the Tzibur, V'lo Yardu Gishamim. And nothing came down, no rain came down. So the 13 fasts are the ones that we saw in the early in the Masechta, which are the first 3, the second 3, and then the subsequent 7. So those are the 13 fasts. So on the last one, they're leaving. On the last fast, everybody's getting up to go out. There's no success, no rain. Says, have you guys prepared your graves? If it doesn't rain now, we're all going to die from the famine. So I hope you guys are going out to dig your graves. Go kol am bibchia. Everyone broke down crying, v'yardu gishamim. And sure enough, the rain came. So similar to some of the stories we saw in yesterday's daf about individuals or chachamim where the rain did not come, and then all of a sudden, chalash date, when they felt bad or when they lost confidence, that's when the rain came. So after the person was nichna or nishbar, once they were broken or they gave in, that's when the rain comes. So that's that threshold or that turning point is what gives the rain, because then Hashem knows that these people have reached that point in time where they are broken and they realize it's all coming from Hashem. Shuv ma'asib Rabbi Eliezer shirad lifnei ateva. He was davening. V'amar yisrim v'arba brachot. And he said the 24 brachot of a tanit. V'lo ne'aneh. And he wasn't answered. Yerad Rabbi Akiva acharav. Rabbi Akiva went after him to daven v'amar. Avinu malkeinu ein lanu melech el atah. Avinu Malkeinu, the Mancha Rachem Aleinu. So here he has 2 Avinu Malkeinos, V'yadu Gishamim, and their Gishamim came down. Ave Miranane Rabbanan, the Rabbanan were murmuring, That's what they were murmuring about. That how come the rain came for Rabbi Akiva and didn't come for Rabbi Elazar? Must be Rabbi Akiva's greater. So the bat kol comes out, the heavenly voice comes out and says, that's not the case. It's not because Rabbi Akiva is greater than Rabbi Elazar. It has to do with the way that they conduct themselves. Because Rabbi Akiva is ma'avir amidotav, which means that he's not makpid on his kavod. He does not worry about being insulted. He lets things go. Whereas Rabbi Elazar was much more makpid on that. So that difference in midot is actually what made the difference, not the difference in who's greater than who in terms of a Talmid Chacham. So here the Gemara talks about how midot play an important role in the Talmud Chacham. It's not all about the greatness or the scholarly or intellectual side of the Chacham. It also deals with his midot. And so Rabbi Akiva was answered by the rain, not because of his erudition, but because of his midot, the way that he conducted himself vis-a-vis others. Also from here, the institution Avinu Malkeinu, which you hear, you see Rabbi Akiva had instituted this Avinu Malkeinu, which becomes a part of our liturgy for but the Yomim Noraim, as well as for fast days, is this Avinu Malkeinu that Rabbi Akiva established. As far as the Avinu Malkeinu itself, it's difficult to make a lot of sense out of the Avinu Malkeinu because the Avinu Malkeinu was not written in one period or put together all in one shot, but it was a cumulative collection of Avinu Malkeinus from different periods of time. There is, within the Avinu Malkeinu, maybe within those Avinu Malkeinu, something that matches somewhat to the Shmoneh Esrei, the Brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, so it parallels the Brachot of Shmoneh Esrei, but otherwise there's not a clear pattern within the Avinu Malkeinu, but mostly because it wasn't written at one time, it really was an amalgamation of Tfilot that became the Avinu Malkeinu that we know today. But here you see Rabbi Akiva himself starting that process of calling out to Hashem and Avinu Malkeinu, using that duality of our relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu, both that He is our Melech as well as our Father, and using that to, as we can say, Kerachem Aval Banim, or when an Eved looks up to his Rebbe expectingly, that we beseech you, Hashem, from both perspectives, that you should help us out in this situation. So Tanu Rabbanan, Ad Matayu Gishamim Yordim VaTzibur Poskim Mitanitam. How much rain has to come down before they stop fasting? So you can start fasting. They start the fast days, then it starts raining. So it rained for a day or two, and then it stopped raining. How do we know whether we should stop fasting or we should continue to have the fast days because we haven't gotten the rain that we need? So the Gemara says it depends how much rain falls. If this amount of rain falls, k'melo berech ha-machresha divi Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that it's the knee of the plow, which means basically the depth of the furrow. If the furrows in the field fill up with water, that's enough. When it's dry or arid soil, tefach, then you have to have, it has to soak through a tefach. Bebenonit, slightly looser soil, it has to penetrate, the moisture has to get in and soak two tefachim on the surface. Bavuda, a field that is plowed or well worked, then shlosha tefachim, because then it's easier for the water to penetrate into the depth, and therefore it needs three tefachim before it's considered wet enough that we would stop or terminate the process of fasting to say we have sufficient rain. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omein, Ein lecha tefach milamala, she'ein tohem yotzei likrato shlosha tefachim. For every tefach worth of rain that penetrates into the ground, there's three tefachim that rises up from down below. Again, we saw this earlier in the Masechta with regards to David HaMelech, and when they dug out the Tehom, and they caused the waters to start overflow, in the story with Achitofel. But this idea that even though the water is significantly below the surface of the earth, nevertheless, the water that falls on top has impact on rising or raising the water table below, and that pushes water back up to the surface. Then we have a brayta that says it's two tefach. It says, lo kan ba'avuda, kan b'sheino avuda. Depends if the land is worked or is it not worked. So that has to do with how far the water will penetrate down below and the impact that it has on the tehom. Amar Rav Elazar, sheminaskim et amayim b'chag, Tehom Amer L'Chaveiro. So when we pour the libations, the water libations on Sukkot, then the depth says to its friend, Abba Memecha, that your water should spring forth. Kol Shnei Reim Ani Shomei. I'm hearing the two friends coming together to speak to us or to meet us. So the two friends, Rashi says, are the two Nisuchim, Nisuch HaYayin and Nisuch HaMayim, that are poured down through the Tzinorot on the Mizbeach, and then they descend to the Tehom. So that's what it means. The two friends are coming to greet us in the Tehom. So therefore, get ready to spring forth, get ready to give your waters from down below. Shinemar, tohom, el tohom kore, the kol tzinurecha. So that the depths to the depths call out, the kol tzinurecha, to the voice of the cataracts. But over here it means that Gemara views this as being that the depths are speaking to one another, responding the kol tzinurecha, to the voice of your tzinur, of the pipe being the pipe that comes down from the mizbeach. Amar Rabba, the di chazili hai ridya, dami li igla. I saw the ridya, which Rashi claims is the sar shel geshem, the malach who's mumunel a geshem, and he's like an egel. He's like a calf or an ox. Upirsa sifdate, and he has a split down his lips. Bekaime ben tahom etata, the tome ilo. He sits between the lower tahom and the upper tahom. The way Rashi describes it is that he's at the point where the sky meets the Atlantic Ocean. So if you look out over the horizon at that point where they meet, that's where he sits. So then, to the upper tahom, to the source of water, he says, chashur memecha, distill your water. And to the lower tahom, he says, spring forth your water to bring your waters up. Shnemar, hanitzanim niru ba'aretz. That the flowers or the buds appeared on the land. V'kolator nishma b'kolein b'aretzein. So there, the Gemara dashes in kolator, which really means the turtle dove. Now here the Gemara is darshaning Torah to mean, from the Aramaic Torah, to mean shore. The kol ator nishma ba'aretzenu. So when is the kol ashor heard? When the netzanim niru ba'aretz, when the flowers are coming up. So when the malach, who's mumuneh al geshem, speaks and says that the waters above should come down and the waters from below should come up, that's what generates the netzanim, that's what generates the flowering of the vegetation. Rashi brings two interpretations of here. One of that says that it refers to the springtime. And one of that, he says, it refers to the time of the Chag of Sukkot, that at that point in time, when the command is given for the waters to come forth, that will produce the flowers in the future at the time of the renewal, at the time of the springtime. All right. Hayu mitanim v'yardu kishamim kodem minetz hachama. So the Mishnah that we started in the beginning of the parak says that if they were fasting and then rain came, depending on when the rain came, they stopped the fast. So one opinion was that if it was before Netzach Chama, the other opinion was Chatzot, midday. So Tanu Rabbanan, Hayu mitanim v'yardu lehem gshamim kodem Netzach Chama, and the rain fell before sunrise, loy li yashlimu lach Netzach Chama. They don't have to finish it off after Netzach Chama, yashlimu divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda Meir, kodem Chatzot lo yashlimu, lach Chatzot yashlimu. So the way Rabbi Meir says is the threshold is Netzach Chama. So if they get rain before sunrise, they don't have to finish the fast. After sunrise, they have to finish the fast. Rabbi Yehuda, on the other hand, says that the threshold is midnight. So kodem chatzot, if it came before midnight, lo yeshlimo, they don't have to finish the fast. Achar chatzot, after midnight, yeshlimo, they do have to finish the fast. Rabbi Yossi Omer, so here's the third opinion which you haven't seen before. Kodem tetshaot lo yeshlimo. If it rains before the ninth hour in the day, they don't have to finish it. But after the ninth hour in the day, they do have to finish. It came and seen by Achav Melech Israel, because we see that when Achav got the news from the Navi, Shitana Miteisha Shot Lamala, he fasts from the ninth hour and on. Shnema Harita Ki Nichna Achav. Hashem says to Eliyahu Navi, do you see that Achav has cowered or accepted the Musar that we gave him? This is in reference to the terrible story of the Navot, HaKarmeli, when Izebel, his wife, kills off Navot to get his vineyard that Achav wants, and then Eliyahu comes to give him the bad news, that is, that Hashem is not happy about this, and he's going to destroy his family, and he's going to wipe him out. So Achav is nichna right away. He realizes he's done something wrong. He takes the Musar, and he humbles himself before Hashem, and Hashem acknowledges that Achav did that. Therefore he says, I will not bring the bad in Achav's time, but rather in the time of his son. But when does Achav fast? So Rashi explains over here that a typical person eats by Chatzot, by the sixth hour in the day. That's when a typical person eats. And we know from the Gemara in Brachot that the kings wake up on the third hour of the day. That's why Zman Kriyat Shema goes until the third hour of the day. So for a king, his day is shifted over by 3 hours. If he gets up at the third hour of the day, then for him to eat on a normal basis would be within that first 6 hours. So that would be 9 hours into the day. So a king typically would eat by the ninth hour of the day. So what is said here is that Achav decided to fast because at the ninth hour of the day he got the information and then he continued to fast and not eat. So you see that just from the ninth hour and onward, that's what's classified as a fast for Achav. So that's what Rabbi Yossi says. If you got past the ninth hour, then that's already considered to be a fast day and you have to finish off the day. But before the ninth hour, then you could still be classified as a non-fast day because for kings, they would not have eaten yet and that wouldn't be classified as a fast. That'd be normal for them. The fast really only is entailed or comes about once you pass that ninth hour threshold. All right, so you have three opinions here. You have Rabbi Meir who says sunrise is the threshold. You have Rabbi Yehuda who says noontime is the threshold. And then you have Rabbi Yossi who says the ninth hour on the day is the threshold by which you can't turn back the fast. If you're already fast at that point, you have to finish off the fast. If the rain comes before that point in time, then you stop the fast. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiya, who is the grandson of Rabbi, he's an Amora. He's the grandson of Rabbi. Gazar Tanita v'yadu lahem gshamim la'achar neitzachama. So the rain came after sunrise, after they put together the Tanit. Savar l'ashlaminu, he thought you have to finish off the fast day. So Amalei Rabbi Ami, kodim chatzot v'achar chatzot sheninu. The threshold, based on the aloch, is like Rabbi Yossi, is that midday, noon, is the cutoff or the threshold, not sunrise. Shmuel HaKatan gazar tanita. Shmuel HaKatan put a tanit in place. V'edu lehem kshamim kodim neitzachama. The rain came before sunrise. K'zvuri ma'am lomar shivcho shel tziburhu. That is the praise of the tzibur. Because, look, it rained even before we started our fasting. I'll give you a parable. What is it similar to? The Eved Shemivakesh Pras Mirabo. A servant or an individual is asking for a reward from the king or from his master. Says, give it to him. Just give him what he wants so I don't have to listen to him. So that's the way Shmuel Katan was saying, listen, the reason Hashem answered and gave you the rain is because he really doesn't want to hear from you. He's not interested in your tefillot. So he gave you the rain so he won't have to listen to your tefillot. Shuv Shmuel HaKatan gazar tanita v'yardu lahem gshamim. Another case where Shmuel HaKatan instituted a fast and rain came down l'achar shkiyat hachama right after sunset, right after they finished the fast day. K'zvurim am lomar shivcho shel tzibur. Again, they wanted to suggest that this was a praise of the tzibur. This was the work of the tzibur. We fasted, we davened, and look, the rain came. Lem Shmuel, lo shevach shel tzibur hu, ela imshol lechem mashal. Don't take credit for this. I'll give you a parable. So ma davar mudumet, what is it similar to? The Eved shemevagesh pras mirobo. V'amar lehem, imtinu lo ad shit makmek bitzter v'chakach tenu lo. A person or a servant is asking his master for a gift or some sort of reward. So he says to the others there, listen, let him beg. Let him melt, let him go crazy, and when he's finished with that, I'll give him the gift. So he intends to give him the gift, but he made him suffer first before he could get the gift. So too over here. The Kadosh Baruch Hu wanted you to give you rain. He could have done that before you fasted. He waited until you fasted, until everything was difficult, and then he gave you the rain because he wanted you to suffer first. So again, that's not a compliment to you. So Gemara says then, okay, L'shmol HaKatan Shivcho Shel Tzibur Hechidami. What's the case where we say that the Tzibur did the right thing and that brought the rain? So Amar, he says, that's a case where he says, Amar Mashiva Ruach, v'nashav zika. He says Mashiva Ruach, and the wind starts to blow. Amar Murido Goshem says that the rain should come, v'atamitrin, sure enough the rain comes. Those are like the stories we saw in yesterday's daf, where they just gave the word and it came. Because that's when you say that the tzibur is deserving, where they didn't even have to institute the fast. He just says, the wind should come, the rain should come, and it comes. That's when you praise the tzibur. That's something where you can take credit that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is responding to the tzibur because of the greatness of the tzibur. In a case where it came before sunrise or after sunset, in both those cases, Shmuel HaKatan says they're not necessarily positive. It could have a negative bent to it. The Mishnah says that in Lod, once it started to rain, they stopped the fast. Everybody went home and ate and got a feast and they drank. And then they went ahead and said the Hallel HaGadol afterwards. So the Gemara wants to know, why did they wait to say the Hallel till after they had eaten? Why don't they say it before? So Bayi Rava, Damrei Tavayu, Lufi She'en Umrim Hallel, El Al Nefesh Sve'a, V'keres M'le'a. You only say Hallel HaGadol when a person is satisfied and his belly is full. In that you have to come with a certain attitude towards Hallel HaGadol, partly because that's in that way you'd be in the right frame of mind to give praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but also because Halel HaGadol has in it Notein Lechem L'chol Basar. So Notein Lechem L'chol Basar indicates that Hashem provides pranos and food to each individual. So first they wanted to eat, and then they wanted to go ahead and say the Halel HaGadol from the right frame of mind, as well as from the upholding what it says in Halel HaGadol that Hashem is Notein Lechem L'chol Basar. It says, Ini, is that really true? Rav Papa iklo the Beit Knishta da Beit Gubar. The Rav Papa went to the shul in the Beit Gubar. Rav Papa is a Talmid of Rava. Begazer Tanit, and he instituted a fast. V'yardulem Shamim at Chatzot. And the rain came down before noontime. V'amar Halel. They said Halel. V'achakach achlu v'shatu. And only afterwards did they go eat and drink. Where it says, Shani b'nei Mechuza, d'shchichi b'hu shichrut. B'nei Mechuza, the city of Rava, was different. They were very wealthy individuals. And therefore, it's very common when they ate lunch or they had a big meal that they would end up drunk. And since they would end up drunk, they wouldn't come back to say Halel HaGadol. So this actually has interesting implications with regards to a difference in halacha between Yom HaKippurim and Tisha B'Av. When it comes to Yom HaKippurim, many have the minhag not to do Kiddush Levana until post Yom Kippur, until Motzei Yom HaKippurim. But the minhag is there on Motzei Yom HaKippurim is to say Kiddush Levana immediately. That is because, first of all, one is dressed up in their fancy clothing. But beyond that, you just have the simcha of mechilat avonot. You just completed Yom HaKippurim. People have been forgiven for their sins. And therefore, it's a time of simcha. So therefore, it's an appropriate time to do Kiddush Levana, which is supposed to be done b'simcha and through song, as we say in Kiddush Levana, as the Ramah brings down that it's appropriate for one to sing and dance after the Kiddush Levana. Whereas when one completes Tisha B'Av, the end of the fast day, then that's not the right context in which to do Kiddush Levana. And therefore, the halacha is that post Tisha B'Av, one should first go home, eat, break their fast, bring themselves into a better state of mind, and then come back and say Kiddush Levana when they are b'simcha, when they're in the proper frame of mind to do Kiddush Levana. Now, it's true that in most places, the practice is to say Kiddush Levana immediately after Tisha B'Av. And it's for similar reasons as to mention over here. Over here, the reason was the shichi be shichrut, with drunkenness. But here, the problem where most shuls face is that if they tell people to go home to eat, people aren't going to come back later to do Kiddush Levana. They end up missing Kiddush Levana. They're not going to remember. They're not going to want to come back to shul. So in order to deal with that issue, they say Kiddush Levana before breaking the fast, even though that's not the optimal way to do it. The optimal way to do it, and if you can get people together to do that, and arrange to meet again, the optimal way to do is to wait post Tisha B'Av to eat first, to break one's fast, and then come back afterwards and do the Kiddush Levana. Okay, with that, we finish off the third parak. Adron Alach, Seder Taniyot Elu.